I think a lot of people were here last night. I want to thank Ari, really, who came to Toronto just to really speak on this issue. And it's a long trip, but even more importantly, we know how difficult it is. Often people do not like to address issues that are sensitive, especially on a personal level. So we want to thank him for coming here and address really, and I imagine he'll discuss a little bit more his personal experience of why he has, quote-unquote, gone off the derrick. We'll discuss whether we like or don't like the term. Hopefully we'll have time for questions afterwards. And for those who don't know, Ari grew up in Dallas, Texas, and he graduated high school just last year. And like many people in the yeshiva world, he's spending a year in Israel, a gap year in Israel, on a Young Judea program and planning to go to university in Florida next year. And here visiting for our beautiful weather on the weekend. And I present Ari Margolis. Bakasha.
First of all, I'd like to thank Torah in Motion for bringing me out here and giving me the opportunity to tell my story. The Gutenbergs for their wonderful hospitality, and all of you for coming out and hopefully laughing at my jokes, at least a little bit. So I would like to take this opportunity to talk about some of my experience in Jewish education, some of my experiences in leaving Judaism, rejecting it, going off the derech, what have you, and just a glimpse into my general point of view on it all, and maybe why the two weren't very correlated. So I was not abused, unloved, and neglected as a child, but nevertheless, I am off the derech. I come from a wonderful family with parents who nurtured me and care about me and whom I maintain an amicable relationship with. Nevertheless, I am off the derech. I have my head on straight, and my mind has not been polluted by drugs, rebelliousness, negative influence of others. Nevertheless, I am off the derech. I had a mostly miserable time in a mostly broken Jewish education system. In many ways, I fit the archetype of a kid destined to reject Judaism. I had an absurd amount of trouble in school. My grades were horrendous. I got yelled at by my teachers. I had a major case of attention deficit disorder. I never quite fit into the box that I was supposed to as an Orthodox child in the typical system. I would like to assert, though, that my experiences in Jewish education had nothing to do with me abandoning my faith. In ninth grade, when I was in yeshiva, pretty unhappy, I made a vow. I saw many of my classmates and friends from yeshiva leaving Judaism, and it pained me immensely. I told myself that no matter how miserable I got, no matter how bad things were, I would never blame God or Judaism for my problems. I never did, and I still don't. I hold nothing against God. I hold nothing against Judaism. And in fact, I still value it all to a point. I used to passionately love and believe in it all. I knew with all my heart, all my soul, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that everything I had been taught since birth was nothing but the absolute truth. I would drag myself out of bed for shacharis almost every morning. So I wake up at 6 o'clock and get there on time, put on tefillin. I put tefillin on with zeal. Later in the day, I would interrupt. I'll put my day on hold to daven mincha and mariv. I'd probably don my yarmulke and tzitzit wherever I went, like a badge of courage, especially in non-Jewish environments. I would have sooner cut my tongue out than eat anything non-kosher, and I would have rather thrown a baseball through my television than turn it on Shabbat. So what happened? How can I go from being a full-fledged Torah-observant Jew to standing here in front of you saying that I went off the derech and Judaism isn't for me, maybe isn't for anyone? How can I say that all this had nothing to do with my miserable time in Jewish education? Guess it's time to find out. I come from a great line of rabbis, including Rashi, the Maharal of Prague, Tosos Yom Tov, and numerous chief rabbis from all over Europe. Somewhere along the line, though, someone must have dropped the buck and messed up pretty badly, because both my parents grew up completely secular. My dad was born in 1950, went to Woodstock, had many non-Jewish girlfriends growing up, and if you saw a picture of him with his mop of hair, mustache and hippie clothing, reclining in front of a picture of Spider-Man that he painted himself, you would never guess that this man would later become a black hat-wearing Orthodox Jew. The only link to Judaism he had was Friday night dinner, where his mother lit Shabbat candles. My mom, born a few years later, had even less of a connection to her heritage. She had never even heard of any of the Jewish holidays growing up. In fact, she was so secular that her mother, my grandmother, gave her the Hebrew name Chaikel, apparently not realizing that it was embarrassingly masculine and not even Hebrew. My mother and father met at a New Jersey Dairy Queen in 1975, and though it was not exactly a great Shadchan story, it was love at first sight. They were married a few years later, and had my eldest brother Daniel living in Iowa, where my dad was attending chiropractic school. They moved to Dallas after he was finished and had two more boys, Andrew and then my other brother David. Sometime after David was born, they had one hell of a religious awakening. With the help of the community rabbi, slowly but surely became more religious. We have a great picture of the first Margulies family Shabbat. Yes, a picture. My dad is breaking his teeth while attempting saying Kiddush. Two of my brothers are shirtless, one of which is sitting on the table. The other is playing some sort of portable game system. 9 years after having the third child, they attempted to right the wrong of not raising the first three children religious, and had two more sons, me, then my younger brother Rafi, who was 3 years younger. When I was born, my family officially started identifying as Orthodox. From preschool to third grade, I attended Akiba Academy in Dallas, local modern Orthodox elementary and middle school. When I was in kindergarten, my teacher noticed I was a little bit different than the rest of the kids because she placed a frantic call to my mother, which must have gone something like, "There's something wrong with your child. He cannot focus. You need to take him to a doctor and get this labeled." And with that, I was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder and doomed to a lifetime of extra time in slow classes. My troubles in school were apparent from the very beginning, but they did not come to head until I switched to the brand new, shiny Orthodox school in fourth grade, Torah Day School of Dallas. To say I was miserable there would be an understatement. I was depressed, troublesome, inattentive, disorganized, incorrigible, and uninterested. I was by no means a bad kid or a problem child, but I still got into a fair amount of trouble, mostly due to my constant boredom. I get sent out of multiple classes a day, and was a staple of the biweekly lunch detention and the principal's office. My grades were absolutely horrendous. My parents had my parents not been substantial donors to the school, which was scrapping for money at the time and probably still is like most of these schools, I would have probably been held back. It was fair to say that teachers did not like me very much, but I definitely blame my behavior for a fair share of the problems I had. My dad actually started an incentive program with me where I got a dollar for every I got a dollar for every day that I did not get kicked out of class. I was pulling in about $3 a month. I was also extremely inquisitive, not necessarily about the subject matter in class. It got me into a fair amount of trouble. I would throw things, I would run little experiments. One time I tied my shoe to my desk to see if I could break the pen that I tied onto it, but that didn't really work at all. I got sent out of class. Rabbi picked me up, put me on my desk, and actually pushed me out, probably breaking several state laws about touching children at the point. But it's always a funny story, at least. One time I tried to start a mutiny in my sixth grade math class because we deemed our teacher too strict. I credit her with me not knowing math, not ever having progressed past the sixth grade level because she didn't really speak English. She was Israeli, and yet she was tasked with teaching a room full of troubled, slow-learning kids with math. I guess it doesn't really involve English, but I never really learned anything. So I just started to start a mutiny. The plan was that we'd all get three. The plan was that the teacher had this discipline policy where we'd all get three strikes every class, and once we got the third strike, we would get an detention. And my plan was that if we'd all misbehaved to the point where we were all getting three strikes every day, she would get tired of doling out ineffective discipline, and she had no choice but change her policy or her teaching style and be at least a little bit nicer. The only problem was that I was the only one to fall through with it, because other kids chickened out after getting just one morning. Being a sixth grade revolutionary is a tough job. Though both me and my parents were averse to me trying ADD medication, I didn't try but every alternative. I was pretty much a guinea pig of homeopathic medicine, quack physicians, and special learning problems. I tried absolutely every fish oil pill, coconut oil supplement, green barley extract, general vitamin, brain balancing pill, and health drink on the market. I visited every tutor, adolescent, and development doctor in a special program in Dallas. Every time a rabbi came to visit, my dad would take me to get a bracha from him, hoping it would cure me of my ills. We probably could have fed Somalia with all the money we poured into this stuff, but instead we decided to fund all Dallas quack practitioners and vitamin stores, but I guess it all worked out. The obvious solution would have just been to switch to school that better suited my needs, but at least my parents were trying, and that wouldn't have even dawned on me or dawned on them to do such a drastic thing. I saw countless tutors regularly throughout elementary school and middle school, and it was fair to say it was unmitigated disaster. Trying to teach me or get me to focus was kind of like trying to control a raging wildfire with a gardening pail. On the recommendation of a family friend, I started being tutored by a specific group who was supposed to be very adept in dealing with children with learning problems. After the first tutor quit on me, about a week through, the head of the company began to come to the house. I was working for three hours a week. She did her best to help me. Except until she quit on me after a month through. She told my mom that since my grades were not improving, even remotely, it negatively affected her and her company. And I guess giving up on me was the only viable solution. Another time my parents took me to this allergy specialist for some reason, and they thought maybe that had something to do with me not being able to focus or just being bored. I'm not really sure what the rationale behind that was. He called himself allergy specialist, but he's more like a modern witch doctor. He ran capsules containing various chemicals like this. I put my arm out, and he had like a giant like book of like little gel pills. He put it over my arm like this. It took about an hour, and he came up with a verdict about an hour after we were finished. He said all my problems were caused by three things: my allergies to cats, my allergies to dogs, which is weird because I never knew I had allergies to cats and dogs. I'm still pretty sure I don't. And the third, that my bed was positioned over an underground waterway, which was really weird because he'd never even been in my house. I'm not sure how he knew that. Eventually we got tired of all these things, but these stories are cute and humorous in hindsight, but at the time it was the furthest thing from funny. I despised school, the burning passion. Every day I'd wake up and my alarm clock would go off, and I would just want to go back to sleep so badly. I'm sure we could all identify with that, but it was just a nightmare. Like, I'd wake up from a dream or wake up from a nightmare, and I just have to do it all over again. School is that awful. After a day of getting yelled at by teachers, not understanding a single thing that I was taught, failing every assignment I tried my hand at, I would come home a mess. I was so depressed, in fact, that my parents found me a psychologist to speak to weekly. Sundays were the worst, because I had a full week of school ahead, and I could never enjoy my free time knowing that I would soon have to return to hell on earth for an entire week. Since I started middle school, I would count down days to graduation. And I was determined that once I left the school, everything would be better. I don't know where exactly I was going to go yet, but I couldn't imagine anything possibly any worse than what it was coming from. And finally, the day graduation came, and I was so happy, probably the happiest I've ever been. And I had a friend, I told my friend this is the best day of my life, and he said, you're probably going to be a little bit happier on your wedding day. I said, I don't think so, I'm pretty happy to get out of here. So anyways, after graduation, we had like a swim barbecue pool party, whatever, at my house. And all my friends were like, I don't know, doing whatever kids do in a pool. And I was sitting on the shallow end on the stairs, and my hand on my head like this. And I was wondering what happened to the euphoria, because as soon as the graduation was over, instead of getting happier, I just got a lot sadder. I wasn't sure why. I thought about it for a while. I think I decided it was because I knew at that point I was poised to go to the local Chafetz Chaim yeshiva. And I actually was really looking forward to it. I knew a lot of the boys there. I spent some time talking there. I played football with them on the weekends. But I just couldn't shake the feeling that things were only going to get worse. Even though I really wanted to get better, I just had this deep sinking feeling inside me that nothing was going to happen. It was just going to continue my misery. So in September 2008, I started off at Texas Torah Institute, like I said, the local Chafetz Chaim yeshiva. Things started off pretty magnificently, but they got bad very fast. I would sit in class, I would space out for hours at a time. I'd download a few games on my phone, began to draw the back of my classmates' heads. I would practice holding my breath, and I think I actually got pretty good at controlling my pulse. But I never answered any questions or took any notes. When that became, when all these tomfoolery, as my dad called it, when that became boring, I just began leaving for entire classes at a time. The rabbis would have stopped any other student, but after a few weeks, they gave up hope on me. They knew I was incorrigible, knew there's nothing they could do about it, and they just let me be on my way. My only moment of escape came during the morning break, when I would turn on my iPod, plug in my speakers, blast the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I'd pull my hood over my head, and walk down the street. These ephemeral moments of nirvana were always cut tragically short, when I could hear the shrieking bell of the school ringing in my ears, even hundreds of yards down the block. I had to get back to class or risk getting detention. I'd never been so miserable in my life. It became pretty apparent that I had to leave yeshiva or suffer a serious mental breakdown. The only question was, where would I go? I was at the only yeshiva in town. This was definitely one of the most lax ones or at least lack suitable yeshivas in the entire country. If I can survive here, I can never survive at any other place, especially a boarding school. There was a Model Orthodox high school, but that was apparently out of the question. One day I overheard my parents discussing my dilemma. They both had enough pity on me to realize I had to switch schools, but it seemed like the only option left was a local school for kids with learning problems in Dallas. Very non-Jewish, nothing like I had ever been to before, nothing like my parents had ever experienced before. It was like crossing over to the other side. Both of them were absolutely hysterical about that option. My dad was convinced I would bring home some blonde chick's girlfriend and abandon my faith immediately. My mom was almost in tears. I did my best to calm their rational fears, but it did not help much. So, after a semester at yeshiva in ninth grade, where everyone wore a black hat, where I'd go for davening in the morning, where I'd stay till 8:30 for night seder, I switched to non-Jewish school. There were girls there. There were sports. It was a lot. It was pretty overwhelming. Again, just like yeshiva, it started off great. I would have gone anywhere to escape yeshiva. And it started off really well. I was really optimistic because the first time I was actually getting decent grades. I was trying in school. I was raising my hand. I was answering questions. I was involved. The teachers seemed like they cared about me. But eventually it became too much to handle. I was not suited for this type of environment. I would hear kids talking about such foreign things like sex, drugs, and alcohol. I would be sitting there. My mouth would drop open. I had no idea what was going on. And eventually, the problems became worse and worse. In yeshiva, I had friends. In yeshiva, at least I had rabbis that were at least okay, who I could talk to. Everything was so foreign to me here. And things only got worse. So after that, I was going to switch school for the third time in 2 years, or fourth time in 3 years, if you count switching to high school from middle school. And now all of a sudden the Modern Orthodox school was an option because there was nowhere else to go. We thought about homeschooling for a while, but I didn't want to be one of those kids, so I just went to the Modern Orthodox school for 10th grade. Zgalden Academy in Dallas. It took a while to get used to, but to this day I love this school with every ounce of being, with all my heart. It gave me friends and identity. It gave me confidence. I came to the school a shell of a person, being broken by a system that chewed me up and spat me out. And I left confident, driven, and poised. Yes, it was during my time at Yavna that I went off the derech. But I'd like to make very clear that there was no correlation between the two. I received a tremendous education there, both secular and Judaic. And my connection to Judaism was only strengthened. My decisions were completely independent of the school environment I was in. However, we all know the story. Things began to change. It all happened pretty sudden. I was in bed one morning. It's probably about the Davar Shacharis. I was 16 in my junior year of high school. And the most absurd thought popped into my head. This thought that turned my world upside down, that changed everything I thought I was, everything I thought I was going to be. And it seemed simple enough, but it completely shattered everything I knew. The thought was, the only reason I was religious, the only reason I was a Jew, is because that's the only thing I knew. I believed in what I believed in, not because it made any sense, not because it was rational, not because I really, truly believed in it, because I was indoctrinated from birth. I was taught the Aleph Beis, I was taught the Brachas, I was taught how to daven to God, how to believe in God, and that's what I knew. I started thinking about it, and it really scared me, because I thought, well, wait a second, what if I was born into a Christian family? I would be just as fervent of a believer in Jesus Christ. I would go to church every day, or every Sunday, whenever they do that, I don't really know. And I would pray to the Christian God. And if I was born to a Muslim family, I would believe every bit as strongly as I do now, or as I did. I would be praying to Allah. If I was born in ancient Greece, I would praise Poseidon and Zeus, or Rome or Jupiter or Neptune, whichever one's right. And every bit as fervent as it did now. If I was born in Africa, any time, I don't know, 100 years ago, I would never even heard of Judaism, and I would be praising sea monsters. And even now I can look at them and I think that's absolutely ridiculous. But I would have believed it, because simply that's what I was taught. And it shook me to my core. And I didn't leave immediately. That gave me the opportunity to step back and look at things objectively. I started to think, does this all really make sense? Do I believe in it because it actually makes sense? Do I believe in this because this is what I want to believe in? This is the eternal truth? Or do I believe in it because I know nothing else? And I couldn't shake that thought. I was lost. Like I said, I did my best to look at things from an objective perspective. And it became overwhelmingly clear that only reason I believed in what I did, the only reason I was an Orthodox Jew, was pure chance, pure circumstance of birth. There were other views that just made so much more sense to me. I'm not going to go into technical details a lot, but there's one thing that really made a lot of sense to me was the burden of proof is that the person who's making the assertion has to provide the evidence. So if you're talking to someone and you tell them that you don't believe in God, they're like, "What? How do you know God doesn't exist?" But I thought about that, but the bottom line is, it's not up to me. It's not up to the individual to prove anything. If I can't stand up here and say Judaism isn't real, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, I'm not making a strong assertion. I'm not indoctrinating anyone. If someone out there is going to tell me how to live my life, the 613 commandments I have to follow, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But they need more than circumstantial evidence. They need concrete proof to back it up. That was just one of, I could talk about it for hours, but that's just one example of something. Then I got things like Occam's Razor, certain talks by Christopher Hitchens, Pascal's Wager, all these things. And they all really transformed how I looked at things. But even then, I wasn't quite convinced. And it really took a while for the transformation to shift. My faith was shaken to the core, and I felt empty. I was so confused. But slowly but surely, I began to remove myself from a Jewish lifestyle. Not all at once, but I did so while I looked into the issues further. The first time I broke any semblance of kashrut, I was at a basketball game, at a school basketball game. We were playing at public school when I was on the junior varsity team. And it was after my game was over, and the varsity team was playing, and I hadn't eaten anything all day, and I was hungry. So I went over to the snack stand, and I bought a cookie. And this cookie was Triangle K. I don't know if you guys have that here, but that's the texture that's deemed, like kind of questionable. You're really not supposed to eat it. See, it was not as drastic as you probably thought it was. Look at this cookie. I already paid $2 for it. I'm still a Jew. I'm not going to waste it, right? So I look at it, I'm like, God, how am I going to deal with this? So I did something pretty ridiculous. At the time, it made sense. I took out a coin from my pocket, and I didn't flip it once. I flipped it three times. The first two times to see if it was going to land 50-50. Heads would be able to eat it. Tails, I would throw it away or give it back or ask for my money back or give it to someone else who didn't care. So I flipped it twice. It was heads and tails. I'm like, okay, now the third time, God's really going to have to make the decision for me. It's not 50-50. If it was once or twice, I understand. The third time, he has to choose a side here. So that's obviously ridiculous, but I was kind of freaking out. And I really wanted that cookie. So I was just going to do whatever I needed to do. And I flipped it, and whichever one it was, I ended up eating it. and that was the first time. That was the first time I ever did anything. The first time I broke Shabbat, first thing I did cookie. That technique, that was so lightweight. But that was such a huge deal for me. I felt awful. I felt so bad about it. Because even though I had kind of decided I didn't really believe in God, I wasn't quite sure yet. I still thought maybe Judaism was real. I still thought maybe what I was taught since birth was the truth. It didn't stop the guilt. I felt absolutely awful. So I asked around a little bit more. I asked some rabbis, looked in some other secular answers. And that was like, well, man, you're kind of spinning out of control here. So I took a step back. But I just couldn't stick. I couldn't, no matter how much I tried to tell myself that this was all real, I really honestly, 100% honest, I could not, I really did not believe in it at all. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't live a lie. So one time, I took my car, I drove to McDonald's, and I went to the drive-thru, and she asked, "What's your order?" I'd never done this before. Right before I about to say it, I drove out. I'm like, God, I can't do this. I drove away, and I turned around, and I did it again. And I chickened out a second time, chickened out a third time. And I'm like, God, I really have to make a decision here. This is ridiculous. I sound crazy. So I parked, I sat down, I thought about it for a minute. I'm like, can I really do this? And the answer was no, I couldn't. At least at that point, I couldn't. And I drove away, and I ate probably something kosher, like challah or matzah at home. I didn't have my McDonald's, and I felt really good about it. I didn't feel good about it. I still felt bad about it because I didn't believe in it. I didn't believe in this. Honestly, I wasn't worried about fire and brimstone, and I wasn't going to go home and daven after. But I still felt bad about it because I didn't believe in it. What was still holding me to it? I don't even believe in this God. It's still giving me grief. I feel like Woody Allen or something. Like, so then, eventually, I really... As they say, the schnitzel hit the fan, and I went to another non-kosher drive-thru restaurant. I went to a break, and I told my mom I was going to a friend's house, and I went, and I had a wonderful taco. It was awful, a lot worse than I thought it was going to be. It was actually disgusting. So all of you, you're not missing anything, I promise. And I come back, and somehow, my motherly intuition, she knew I wasn't where I was supposed to be. says, where were you? I'm like, I was at Reed's house. What are you talking about? I was picking up a comic book. He's like, no, you weren't. I don't know. Does she have a GPS tracker in my car or something? I have no idea how moms do it, but I'm sure you all can fill me in after or something. And I'm like, Mom, you're paranoid. Leave me alone. I went upstairs and whatever. The next day, I did the same thing. I'm like, Mom, I'm going to my friend's house. I'll be right back. And she's like, okay, I'm sure you are. Right? So I drove. I enjoyed another disgusting burrito or taco or whatever it was. And I came back, and my mom's waiting for me. She's like, where were you? I'm like, God, Mom, Jesus, leave me alone. You know where I was. I told you. She's like, no, you weren't. And eventually, she kept giving me grief for it. And I wasn't ready to tell her yet. I really wasn't, because I wasn't sure everything was going to stick. Obviously, the life is still an open book. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't make any concrete decisions yet, just like I still haven't. But at the point, I had no idea how I was going to tell my parents about it. I wasn't the type to keep. We had a very open relationship. I was not the type to keep anything from them, or at least something so life-changing as this. So I went to my room, and I wrote my mom an email. I sent it to my mom and dad, and then I wrote all about how I've been a little bit grumpy lately. A lot's been on my mind. I'm sorry, but I don't believe in God. Sorry. I don't believe in Judaism. Then the bottom, I told her I went to Taco Bell. And after I sent that, about half an hour later, I was on my way to JCC to go play basketball or exercise or something. And to this day, this is the most painful experience of my entire life. I walked to my mom's room to tell her where I was going, and I opened the door. And she's there with a computer on her lap, and she's crying. And I cannot tell you how awful I felt, the sinking feeling of despair. God, how could I do this to my own mother? She held me as a baby. She fed me. She took care of me. She paid for my education. She put clothes on my back. And I'm sitting here, I'm making her cry. And I don't know, I wasn't going to take anything back. I'm like, Mom, I tried to calm her down. She was just bawling. She's like, you have no idea what this feels like. I'm like, I'm sure I don't, but like, I was inconsolable. And the bottom line was, I had to tell her, but I felt so awful. I went back while I was writing the speech, and I read the email. And I'm like, God, how could I be so stupid? Like, it was a necessity. But writing it just makes me cringe. It was really the most, out of all the awful experience I had in school, out of all the psychologists I went to, out of all the things I told them, everything, this is the worst thing that I've ever done. The feeling of despair, it felt like someone took my heart out, threw it on the ground and stomped it, and that's how bad it felt. So after that, I realized that I don't believe in God, I don't believe in Judaism. I have no meaning in life. It bothered me then, not so much now, because I kind of reconciled it, but I wrote like a mission statement. I wrote 5 commandments. So I'm not going to read the entire mission statement, but I'll read you the 5 commandments, kind of like half the 10 commandments, I guess. Just something I could put on my wall, I could live my life by. I had 5 commandments. And this is something I haven't looked at in a while, but just to put you in the mindset that I was at the time, I was confused, I was lost, I really had no idea what was going on. Number 1, be happy and content. Number 2, get filthy rich and be successful. Number 3, help others and better the world in most ways possible. Number 4, be an overall good person. Number 5, learn and inquire as much as possible. I know it's a whole mission statement, but I don't know if I have time to read it out now. But eventually, things became a little bit easier. I grew into myself a little bit. I reconciled with my parents. We had a meeting about it. We talked, okay, like, here's the rules. Here's what you're going to do. Here's what you're not going to do. And I'm really, I think they could have handled it a lot worse. They handled it pretty decently. And life moved on. But coming out, one of the hardest parts was telling my parents. But surprisingly, telling my friends was almost as hard. I went to this modern Orthodox school, and I was by far, it's not modern Orthodoxy in Dallas, isn't like it is here. If you're modern Orthodox, you're usually not religious. You wouldn't be considered modern Orthodox here, not even close. And I was by far I was one of the top 3 religious kids in the school, easily. And all my friends were very non-religious. Most of them, none of them kept Shabbos. A few of them kept some semblance of kosher, and most of them were completely secular. Though they went to the school, I'm not exactly sure how that worked, but it wasn't like there was any weight being lifted off my back. If anything, it was just more was being poured on, because I felt like I was disappointing them. I felt like I was disappointing my rabbis. I felt like I was disappointing my parents. I was a spokesperson. I was one of the few kids that actually kept Shabbos. I would hang out with them after. I wouldn't answer their texts till after Shabbat. Some of them came over for lunch. I just felt awful. I felt like I was letting everyone down. So with all this grief, so I decided to go to, on the recommendation of someone I talked to who'd been through a similar ordeal, I decided to go to a psychologist, another one. I've been through a million. This is one of the latest ones. And I told him my story. I told him, okay, I blame my parents for this. I don't blame them for this. I had a miserable time at school, this, that, this, that. And he came out with the very ludicrous verdict that the only reason I was doing what I was doing, I dropped Judaism because I was blaming my parents for the miserable education system that they put me through. So I turned around and I counter-diagnosed him and I said, you're only saying that because you're a Catholic and you can't possibly understand. There's no way that you could possibly rationalize what I'm doing from any scientific grounds. So you're going to be a quack psychologist here and say that it's because I'm rejecting something. He didn't like that answer very much. I don't think I talked to him much after that. But so I talked to that. Eventually, I went on an NCSY summer program going to 12th grade. It was all right. Then eventually 12th grade happened. I'm only 18 now. I've been out of high school for something like 6, 7, 8 months. And 12th grade was good. I grew into myself even more. I began reading a lot about the subject. I'm very well versed in it now, or at least much more than I was before. And so I couldn't go out on Friday nights. I had to be home. I had to be down on Shabbat. I had to be down for the meals, Friday night and Shabbat lunch. And it was all right. Like my parents, we had a kind of don't ask, don't tell policy. Sometimes I would tell them I'd go to friends. I would sneak out and go and get driven somewhere. But for the most part, I followed the rules and we got along pretty well. We got into some arguments, sometimes about theology, sometimes not. But for the most part, out of how bad it could have gone, it was pretty decent. So then, when the time to consider what I was doing this year or next year for my gap year in Israel, which I'm currently on now, we were kind of confused. I really had no idea what I was going to do. I was considering yeshiva. I was considering some other programs. And there's a yeshiva called Neve Zion in Israel. I don't know if any of you guys know about that. But it's kind of for the messed up kids. And I had a few brothers go there, actually. But they came they came out like tremendous. Black hat, tzitzis, yarmulke, whatever. So they do something right. So anyways, my family is pretty well inundated with the yeshiva, it's fair to say. And the rabbi, the recruiter, came out to talk to me. Come all the way to Dallas just for me. Probably because I was going to be one of the only ones who was actually paying tuition. But so I'd pay back his plane ticket multiple times. So he came out and talked to me. And this guy's wearing a strimal and the hat thing and the payas, right? And he comes over and says, Ari, okay, he texts me, I'm going to be there at 10 o'clock. I'm like, okay, fine. So he shows up to my house, knocks on the door. He's like, is there somewhere we can go, like a Starbucks? This is what he says to me. And I say, I mean, it's like 10 o'clock. This is Dallas. Things close pretty early. I think there's one open until 10:30. I'd rather just sit and talk in my dad's office. He says, no, we're going out. And I keep going, like, come on, please. I don't want to do this. Let's just stay here. And finally, he keeps on bugging at me. He keeps on telling me, okay, we're going somewhere. Fine. Okay, I get out my keys. I open my car. I'm apparently driving. And I get in the car. I pull in my driveway. He's like, Ari, let's go to a bar. What? And I look at him like, Rob, are you crazy? First of all, I'm 17. Drinking age in Israel is 18. I'm not even old enough to drink there. America's 21, so I still have 4 years to go to do it here. And I just had no idea what was going on with this guy. So then she was set on going to a hookah, like a water pipe thing, like which you sit and you relax. And I walk in there with this rabbi, fully garbed. And these places are run by Arabs. I thought I was going to die. So we left one that was fully empty, went to the other one, it was slightly less awkward. Anyways, I sit there, and I talk to him for a while. And I ask him all these questions. Okay, the guy came out here, might as well give him a chance. I asked him all these questions about God, what's the yeshiva like. Every answer was the exact same. He said, you have to ask the mosh. Who's the mosh? Mosh is the Rosh Yeshiva, technically, the guy who's in charge. And he was really trying to get me to come to yeshiva just so I could ask the questions. That wasn't going to happen on my own terms, but apparently on my parents' they were. So I finished school. My last day of 12th grade was in April. I went on the March of Living, a trip to Poland and Israel, and it was wonderful. And I stayed in Israel. I was supposed to spend a month at this yeshiva. And this place I really hope you guys know about it, because it's a really interesting story. This place is a madhouse. There's three floors in the dorm. The first one they call heaven, second one they call purgatory, and the third one they call hell. The first one, the kids don't really get into fights so much, and they may be smoking cigarettes, and not much more. The second floor, they're doing some pills and other illicit substances, and they get into fights. Third floor, these kids, they never see these kids, because they kind of just stay there and like do heroin or whatever they do. Actually, some of them actually do heroin. You just say, like, look at me. Like, I don't get to fights. I don't do drugs. Like, I maybe drink a little bit in Israel when it's legal. But, like, come on, I'm not rambunctious like that. And I spent a week there. I was supposed to spend a month there. I spent 7 days or 8 days here. I call my mom, get me the hell out of here. I cannot take this. I am not like this at all. And that's, it's funny. I think people tend to lump all these, all this off the derrick kids into one archetype. But we're not like that. I can't speak for everyone. But I would really like to think mine was more an intellectual pursuit, less of emotional. I didn't really have so many things that I was very angry about. The place was just a mess. It wasn't for me. So I really thought about going to yeshiva. I really did. I almost went to an Asia Torah program, Chai Israel. And I was about to sign up, and I was about to call the rabbi and say, okay, I'm down. But then I thought about it. I'm like, okay, I really cannot dedicate a year of my life to something I do not really believe in. And the book's still open, and I'll see what happens, but I really cannot go to yeshiva. So instead, I'm on Young Judea Year Course. Wonderful program. They're paying us $1,000 for getting the kids to go on it, so you can talk to me after if you're interested. I really could use that money. And it's Young Judea Year Course. And it's like one of those like conservative, gung-ho Zionist move to Israel programs. And like, it's all right. I enjoy it. It's not as wonderful as I would have thought it to be, but it's a really solid program. And I'm in Israel. I'm kind of getting ready for the real world. I'm wanting to do things like use a city bus system, which I never sat on my entire life. And not one time before I came to Israel was ever on a public bus. Not once. Not once to ever do my own laundry. I don't think I even knew how to use an oven. My mom was pretty good at taking care of me. So like, I've really learned to inundate myself, but I've not grown one iota religiously. It's fair to say, I think. So now what? I'm a self-professed atheist. I'm off the derech. I don't think Judaism is legitimate and is valid. But I'm 18 years old. What's going to happen now? So this is what I tell people. As much as I like to think that I know everything as an 18-year-old, the sad truth is that I do not. I really think I do sometimes, but probably I don't. I don't know everything. The world is a big, beautiful place, and there's so much to be learned. No matter what perspective, no matter if you're Jewish and you're trying to learn more Judaism, no matter if you're atheist and trying to learn about science, no matter if you're just a person trying to get along in the world and trying to learn more about it, and just live and just be. Do I ever think that I'll really believe in God again or return to Judaism? I really don't think so. But you never know. A few years ago, I was absolutely sure I would never stop believing in it. And look where that got me. I'm never going to be 100% sure of anything again, because that leaves no room for inquiry. And it's just counterproductive. Every time I talk to someone about, I get into many arguments or many civil debates or whatever you want to call them with certain people about theology and religion and all this stuff. And before I start, I always ask them, are you 100% sure in what you believe in? And if they say yes, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to talk to you. Because if you're 100% sure in what you believe in, there's no room for anything. You're not going to learn anything. There's no way you're going to change your mind. Because if you're 90, I would say I'm not 100% sure in what I believe. I'm 95% sure. I'm 98% sure. My mind is open. If any of you have any proofs for God, please find me. Send me an email. I'm open. It would be absurd for me to stand here and say I know everything. Because what can happen tomorrow? What can happen the next day? So many people ask me, now that I don't believe in Judaism, that my life does my life have no meaning? Does it make me sad? You know, in a way, they're right. But there's a magnificent quote by George Bernard Shaw, an Irish playwright and socialist, apparently. He says, the fact that a believer is happier than a skeptic is no more to the point than the fact that a drunk man is happier than a sober one. So maybe my life is miserable, and maybe life is brutish and short, like Thomas Hobbes says. But so what? Does it make it false? Does it make what I believe in false? Or does it make any happy, dogmatic life any more legitimate? Absolutely not. There's plenty to latch on to if I need to be happy. I think I'm happy. I hope I'm happy. But if I ever find myself not happy, I really honestly don't think there needs to be religion in my life to do that. The world is magnificent. There's no reason to limit myself. So I guess I was brought here to represent every off-the-derrick teenager out there. But that's an impossible task. For each person, there's a story, a motive, an idea. We don't just have eyes. There's a story behind the faces. We can all be lumped into one at-risk being or at-risk teenager. Everyone is different. Just like I'm different from another kid who went off the derrick. Everyone here is different. You all have your stories. You all have your motivations. It's foolish to lump everyone into one ball of off-the-derrickness or Judaismness or whatever. And we're all different, but it's just okay. Sure, the education system is broken, but it really affects each kid in his own level. There very well may be nothing you can do to stop certain kids from going off the derech. No amount of love and caring and proper parenting would stop them. I would really like to say, I would really honestly believe that no matter where I went to school, that despite my miserable education, despite me going to non-Jewish school, despite me going to a modern Orthodox school where I may have been, I don't think I was, where a lot of people think I was heavily influenced by those less religious than me. I really honestly think that these questions, when they came up to me anyways, they weren't, because I was not driven to them by any dislike of Judaism. I respect Judaism, and I always will, and I loved it, and I still do to a point, I still value it. I was not driven off, I was not angry, I was not kicking and screaming at the point. I was alright. Yeah, I was miserable. But I, like I said, I was never going to blame, and I was never going to blame God for my problems. I was very good at isolating the incidents. I was very good at keeping them separate. Don't blame yourselves for the kids in the community going off the derech or your children or anything like that. Many times the parents do nothing wrong. It's just going to happen. The best you can do is continue to hold their hand like you always have. Continue to love them. Continue to hug them like you always have. Love them unconditionally. Because it's surely better to have an off the derech child than no child at all. Thank you. There we go.
I want to commend you for coming and publicly talking about your experience. I think you're very intelligent and honest. And I think what you're going through is very typically Jewish. I think there's a lot of room in Judaism for doubts and not really being sure. I just encourage you to keep asking and maybe find someone that you can learn with. Whatever interests you, what you want to find out. And there will be times in your life where you will have to make decisions, and some of them are irreversible. You'll meet a nice girl. You'll have to decide for yourself, am I still in, or is that it? So those moments will come in your life when you have to make those decisions. But it doesn't sound to me like you've run off to, you know, being a completely non-Jewish environment, and you're still within.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's still being Jewish. You're asking questions, and I just encourage you to keep asking and finding answers for yourself.
Thank you. I'll do my best.
Very, very impressive, honest, straightforward, insightful, actually, is the word I would use. I think we all appreciated the way you've researched into yourself and come up with a way of life that you feel fits you. I'm just like wondering now that you're like beyond that difficult phase, perhaps. What would you advise your younger self? Like, what advice would you give that person going through all that you went through from the perspective where you are now? Like, obviously, a younger self wouldn't be able to take absolutes like, oh, I don't believe in it, I don't do it. But what kind of concrete advice would you give that younger self?
Do you mean a younger self still miserable within the Jewish education system?
Whoever you were, the person, the child you described, that whole upbringing.
So I would tell them to find a time machine and skip it all. But
to what?
To just to get out of there while you still can. But as much as I was definitely clinically depressed at a time. I really had a lot of problems. But for better or for worse, it made me who I am. And that sounds kind of cheesy because I really don't think I wouldn't go through it again. But it shaped me who I am. I wouldn't be standing up here in front of you if it wasn't for it. So I guess there's a silver lining on everything.
Hi, thanks for coming and giving us your story. Do you think that if you found someone that proved to you, that was satisfying in a proof that Torah is true, that the way Torah presents God is true, and you were convinced of this, that you would go back to leading a Torah life?
Very possible. The problem with that is, as far as I've seen so far, there is no proof. I guess that's the whole point of it all. It's faith. It wouldn't be faith if there was proof. So if there's some sort of immaculate thing that happened to me where God presented himself, before I check myself into insane asylum, I'd probably go back to being religious, yes.
And do you think that you are holding the proof of Torah as being true to a higher standard that you demand of other areas of life for being true?
Very good question. And I would say absolutely, because There's no 613 laws of science that tell you how to dictate your life. And there's really no problem. I really had no problem with following Judaic laws. But I said about the burden of proof. If you're making an assertion, you're all fine to believe in God. But if you're going to tell me God exists and tell me Judaism is real, you need something substantial to back it up. Whereas I could stand here and I could say, I don't know, I could be wrong, I could be right. And I'm not projecting any sort of anything upon you that needs to be actually followed. So it's about being passive and looking for an answer. And so it's about, I mean, it's really about saying that you don't know, but there's nothing really wrong with not knowing.
Because there's many areas of our life where we do follow prescriptions and that we don't impose upon ourselves to check it out. Is there, for instance, you know, medicine and drugs that, you know, following advice of a doctor, and many areas of life that we don't demand that we check it out as much, but that we demand of religion, of Torah. So anyway, I'm just wondering if you do impose that higher, much more than other areas of life that you do follow.
Right. Now, I think simply because it is a way of life, because it governs everything you do, it itself is already a higher standard that it must live up to inherently. Obviously, you could question it, but the point is, it's telling you what to do. It's governing your life. It's governing your afterlife. It's governing what happened before life, and that's fine. But I really think it should provide. Obviously, for me, if I find an Advil, I'm not really going to read the directions, because what's going to happen? I take an Advil. You know, I'm not determining everything like Judaism does, in fact.
Well, in some instances, it's life and death, but anyway.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for, you know, having the courage to come out with this. I'm asking this as someone who myself actually went off the derech when I was just a little bit older than you and came back about 25 years ago and have spent the last 25 years, you know, trying to reinforce my choice. Did you hear Rabbi Skovak's talk?
I think I got the end of it.
Okay, so it's too bad that you didn't, because he mentioned four points that weren't a recipe to kind of keeping people on the derech, but kind of as a collective, which certainly, you know, very much helps somebody who was floundering at some point in their life. And, you know, there's things that you kind of missed out on, unfortunately. Like, because you had such a turbulent education, you were kind of out of it in the class. And if you happen to have been at a school that addressed things to help somebody understand the fundamentals of our faith and the, you know, the so-called proofs, which aren't really proofs of the truth of Judaism and so forth, you know, you might have internalized that, but you couldn't because you were out of it and, you know, you were just having such a terrible time. Plus, you know, your parents were Balei Tshuva, you know, people for whom I have incredible respect. It's such a huge step, but many Balei Tshuva are so, you know, distraught with trying to do all the do's and the don'ts and get it right, that, you know, the love of Hashem and feeling Hashem every day and all that is just sort of a little bit beyond them because they have so much more to do. You know, those are just two of the steps. And then, you know, there was also the step about, you know, growth and development as a person, which is a lifelong process. And then the meaning in life, which, of course, you're searching for. So, you know, I just, you know, it was just very interesting to see sort of, you know, how true Rabbi Skovak's words seem to be.
I guess we could discuss it later then.
Yeah. And I think it would be good if you could, you know, these are recorded. It would be great for
right,
you.
Right, absolutely. I'll take a look. Thank you.
Okay, last question.
Okay. I'll be right after. I have like a couple minutes before my flight if anyone wants to catch me.
Okay. I want to thank you for your story. And I kind of identify with you. I'm very conflicted. I always have been. I wasn't brought up in a, you know, religious home, but I was always attracted to Judaism from the time I was a kid. I wanted to go to Stern College. It didn't work out. It was almost like my destiny was to be part of the secular world. I'm very comfortable in the secular world, and I can't embrace, well, Orthodox Judaism totally. There's a lot I think is beautiful. There's a lot I disagree with. Ironically, we have a son who has become very religious, and I disagree with a lot of his philosophies. And I'm not prepared to give up my involvement in the secular world. So I want best of both worlds. And that's
right.
Kind of where I'm at. But I enjoy searching and reading, and there's a lot about Yiddishkeit I find very inspiring. So I'm sort of in the same situation as you, and
right.
I feel comfortable in both worlds.
Thank you. If anyone has any other questions, you can email me at re.margulies@gmail.com. Or if you want to be extra ambitious, check out my website, arimargulies.com. Actually, it's there. Check it out.
Okay, thank you very much. Everybody have a good day, and hopefully we'll see you in 3 weeks for our Tanakh conference, Yom Iyun at Sher Shemaim, on the 10th of February, and I'll send out emails about that.